Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. I thought that was going to be your watch, but fortunately it isn't. Sorry about that, everyone. Our second reading can be found on page 1153 in the Church Bibles, and it's St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians, the first letter, chapter 13. So Corinthians 1, chapter 13. Love. And now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when perfection comes, the imperfection disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I'm really scared. Just thought I'd let you know that. Put that out there straight away. Hi, my name's Amy, for those of you who don't know me or remember me. And we left 51 weeks ago. nearly a year ago to the week, so that's lovely that I've come back to share with you this morning. So me and my husband Femi and our little girl Talitha, who was very little, well, was born here, is now nearly two. So that's a bit scary. So hopefully they're going to come at the end and you'll be able to see them. So we've not been here for a year, but I realised that I've not been at the Nine in an upfront way for 2 years, because the last time I was at the Nine, I was like 36 weeks pregnant, and the thing that I remember most is I stood behind the table to do communion, and I couldn't fit. And I can't remember who it was, and two two guys, you had to come and move the table forward because I like had such a huge bump. And I remembered that this morning. I was like, oh, that's a long time ago. So thank you for having me back this morning. It's really lovely to be with you. Yeah, so as Stuart said, we're now in Whiteley, so just down the M27, theoretically 20 minutes, but you know, could be anything up to 2 hours away. So I'm pioneering there in Whiteley part-time. It's been fun. You can talk to me about it afterwards if you'd like. I know that last week you had Andrew Hargreaves, and I saw him the week before at a diocesan thing, and we were having a chat, and we both thought that we were preaching today. So we both had that moment when I was like, I'm pretty sure it's me that's doing like the 23rd. And he was like, no, I'm sure it's me. Anyway, so we had a little panic, and thankfully I was right, because the panic inside me was huge that week. So today we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. He did 12 last week, and I think someone's coming to speak to you next week. So that's Talitha now. So, a few weeks ago, Talitha and I had gone to Asda to do our weekly food shop, and as you can imagine, it was a very thrilling shopping experience. After finishing the shop, we headed back to the car. I unloaded the shopping, and I put Talitha in her car seat and strapped her in. At this point, the key thing for you to know is that one of her favourite things to do is driving, where she sits in our car with the handbrake on, the car is off, obviously one of us is in there, and she drives the car. She plays with like the steering wheel and kind of the indicators and stuff. Obviously it's all off, it's very safe, I promise you. But that is an important piece of information, because what happened next? I sat in the car and we started to drive, and for some reason in her head, she had decided that she was driving the car home. Which she obviously wasn't. We were, you know, 16 minutes from home, and she can't drive. I had to drive the car. So I kind of explained to her very gently, no, darling, mummy's got to drive the car home. You know, mummy's the grown-up. This, amazingly, wasn't a satisfactory answer for a toddler. No, mummy, my turn, I drive. Well, darling, as I just said, mummy's got to drive home. No, Talitha, I drive. So, as you can imagine, you know, she just took my answer and sat there very quietly for the rest of the journey. No, I can tell you it's 16 minutes home, because I lived every single minute of that 16 minutes. There were tears. She was very upset. She was saying, no, mummy share. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so hard being two. Anyway, and she got herself so upset that she even had to start asking for a tissue because she had so much snot on her face at the back. Not a pleasant journey for either of us, but you know, we survived it. We haven't been back to Asda since. What's my point, apart from she's, you know, really cute in a car? My point is that we all have gifts and skills, but we've got to learn to use them at the right time and in the right place, or disaster could happen. So 1 Corinthians 13 is one of the most famous Bible passages, usually heard at weddings. I'm sure all of us have been to at least one wedding where it's being used as a foundation for a couple in their married lives together. But today I would like us to look at it and think about it as a dynamic foundation for how we use our spiritual gifts in this community here, in our church. What we do with each other and how we relate to each other. So if you want to open the passage, then please do. So it was on page 1153 is where it starts, if you want that open as a prompt for you as we go through. So I'm just going to break down the passage into three sections. So we're going to look at verses 1 to 3, 4 to 7, and 8 to 13, and we'll explore each just a little bit more. So the first thing we're going to look at is, if I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and hand over my body so that I may boast, or in your translation, it's to be burnt, I think, or put to death. But I have not love, I gain nothing. Confession time. At 9 o'clock each evening, I have to try and make sure that all our household jobs are done, all the washing up is done, the washing is ready, and we're ready for the next day. Because at 9 o'clock on ITV2, Love Island starts. If you're not aware of the show, then please do not take this as a recommendation to watch it from the front of church. It's a guilty pleasure watch where basically some single guys and single girls go and stay in a villa in Mallorca and they couple up, and over time they hope that they fall in love. Again, please do not take this as a recommendation to watch. If you'd like me to recommend something, then Years and Years on the BBC is a real must watch. Go and watch that. Don't watch Love Island. It's awful, trashy telly. But what the Love Island are desperate for is love. And all that love brings, so security and contentment and happiness. But very few couples last in the outside world when they get outside the villa. So there's no couples from last year's show and only one couple from the year before. Because Love Island is a place that, as well as love, well, there's an awful lot of competitiveness, self-indulgence, comparison to each other, brokenness, gossiping, backstabbing, and the list could go on. Ironically, it's not a brilliant Love Island. Because Paul has told us a few chapters before that love builds up. It does not destroy. And he'll speak again in chapter 14, the next chapter next week. And I wonder how often we get that wrong in the church. Because honestly, the unattractive list that I just read about the Love Island villa could be sometimes read about the church too. And I don't just mean this church, I mean the church worldwide. And I'm not saying all those things all the time. But I wonder who has ever in this church witnessed or had done to them, or if we're really honest, have been the one doing any of those things. Have you ever gossiped about someone in church behind their back? Especially when sometimes we say, oh, you must pray for so-and-so because you'll never guess what. Have you ever looked at someone and wished that you were doing, you know, you had the gifts that they had? Or you had the recognition that they had for the gifts? Do you ever look and, you know, see and just a bit jealous of someone else rather than thinking about yourself? Because Paul is writing this letter to a group of broken humans. And actually, that's the same whether you were in the church in Corinth, the church in Shirley, or if you're in a villa in Mallorca. We're broken humans. So this whole passage is about love, isn't it? And love must be at the centre of all we do as people who follow Jesus. And that includes how we use the gifts that we've been given. And the love used here, I don't know if what has been talked about before, but it's kind of agape love. So it's big love that covers all and that goes out and searches for the unlovable and lavishes true love on them. It's the kind of love that would sacrifice everything for the sake of the other. And when we think about gifts, that has to be our very foundation to how we use our gifts that have been so generously given to us by God. Even the examples that Paul gives at the very end of that sort of three verse chunk, to give away everything I have or to sacrifice your body, are worthless without love. You could be doing the very best, you could be trying your hardest, but if you do not have love as a foundation, then Paul's saying here, it's worthless. And kind of, but why? Like, who sees our real motivation, I suppose, is my question, apart from God anyway. And I think it's this, is what I've been coming back to, that lovelessness, I don't know if that's a word, spell check didn't like it, lovelessness is a people repellent. Without love, I am nothing, Paul states. Not just I'm less, I'm a little bit less than where I should be, I'm nothing. Because if people don't know they're loved by you, it doesn't matter what you do for them, say for them, prophesy over them. They won't hear it or take it in the way that it's meant. And I think you mustn't try and love people so you can prophesy over them. You should try and love people because you love them, because you love them. And out of that relationship will come gifts, your gifts that you can use. You can speak, you know, knowledge over them and prophecy over them and things like that. Sounds hard and a bit scary, I think, when we talk about this kind of love, but helpfully, Paul has told us exactly what this love looks like. So the next bit, 4-7. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious, nor boastful, or arrogant, or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. My dad, who's also a vicar, used to say this in his wedding sermon. Because in case you didn't know, vicars have like two wedding sermons on the file, and they think about who's coming, and they do a little swap kind of, you know, between the two. And he used to go through this passage now, and he would say, if you could replace the word love with your name, would you still be telling the truth? And I'll show you with mine to save us any embarrassment. Amy is patient. Amy is kind. Amy is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. And I'm going to stop there because the picture doesn't get any better for me. Because the reality is, ready for a shock, I'm not all those things. I'm not all those things all the time. Goodness me, I'm not all those things half the time. And on particularly bad days, I feel that my percentage would drop to be incredibly low. Because we're not like that. Sometimes I'm quite nice. Sometimes I'm really not a particularly pleasant person to be around. Because the only person who has demonstrated that love for us like that is Jesus. Jesus is the only name that works if you replace the word love in that sentence. He's the perfect picture of love. But just because we can't attain it by ourselves doesn't mean we shrug it off and try and forget about it. No, we use the Holy Spirit who's in himself and gifted to us, who lives inside us, who shapes us. And using that gift that we've been given, we head down our road, our journey of life, and we try and be like Jesus. And we try and use the things that Paul has like listed for us there. And some days we're going to go down the road really easily. And we think, yeah, today, with the Holy Spirit's help, I have been, I have been patient and I've been kind. And there are other days when it feels like we've got both feet down a pothole and we don't know what we're doing or where we're going. But on those days, it's important to remember that the Holy Spirit is still with us. We just have to allow him to encourage us to inhabit more of those qualities. So spiritual gifts is what I'm supposed to be talking about, and you'll be thinking she's not really mentioned them. The church in Corinth at the time was dealing with a lot of backbiting and jealousy and gossip, and it seemed that a lot of that was centered around the use of spiritual gifts. Because people were looking at themselves and comparing themselves to each other, looking at what they could do and wishing they'd be more like each other. So why is Paul talking to us about love in this sort of context? Well, who's he pointing the Corinthians back to? He's pointing them back to the one who never resented what others did, the one who always celebrated with others' success, and the one who could, you know, legitimately blow his own trumpet, but never did. Paul is realigning our vision and their vision he's realigning their vision away from what's going on around them and back to the person of Jesus Christ. Because it is only through knowing this, the person of Jesus Christ, and knowing this perfect love that he demonstrates, that we can even begin to tackle our self-centeredness. Our ideas of keeping up with the Joneses, even in church, about gifts, not necessarily just our neighbours and cars. And that was the church, that was the world that the church in Corinth was facing. And maybe I wonder if for some of us that's the world we're facing too. Paul is realigning our vision back to the person of Jesus Christ and away from what is going on around us. Love never ends, but as for prophecies, they will come to an end. For tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For what we know only in part, we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put to end the childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, and then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. Love never ends. The Greek here means falls or collapses when it says never ends. The love will never buckle under pressure. There will never be something you can do that will remove God's love from you. It's the only love in the world with an uncollapsible ability. Because sometimes in our human relationships, we push it too far, don't we? I don't know if you've ever been there and fallen out with someone when actually it feels very difficult and it feels that love for however short a time might have collapsed, might be breakable. But actually this love that God is talking about, that Paul is talking about, is uncollapsible. It's solid and it's firm and it's what we have to build our foundation for using our gifts on. And then Paul compares the love to the three most important gifts that would have been viewed by the church in Corinth at the time: prophecy, speaking in tongues, and knowledge. And he reminds them that they too are fleeting and they will pass away. The only thing that is solid is the love of God for each of us. And they are useful now. Those gifts are incredibly useful now. But actually, in eternity, they won't be useful because we will be face to face with Jesus. I wonder if we can think back to the story of Talitha in the car at the beginning. And in time, in her case, 15 years to be precise, she will be able to acquire the skills that she wants and be able to learn to drive a car. And I hope that when that day comes, she doesn't just yell at me from the back seat that she'd like a turn and I have to share. I hope that she's able to speak to me about it sensibly. And we can have a conversation about learning to drive. Certainly a two-way conversation rather than just being yelled at. Now, and as the car park, if she had turned around and started to tell me about driving theory, that would have been worrying because she's two. It would have been odd because she's a child. She doesn't know about road laws and things like that. She's on a learning journey of her own, and learning to drive is a long way down that journey. So as parents, some of us, we sit with the anger of a two-year-old who's had no said to them. And we wait in that anger and we tell them it's going to be okay, and we hand them a tissue and we tell them that we love them because we know that they're on a growing up journey. And the love I had for Talitha in that moment was huge. It was a hard car journey for me. I'm a very anxious driver, and 16 minutes of crying is hard. But I wasn't cross with her. I loved her in that. She was sad and angry, and I was sad that she was angry. And actually, this is how God feels when he watches over each of us. Sometimes we're having a tantrum in the back of our car, and God is just driving, and he's telling us that it's okay and that he loves us and he's with us because his love is huge. That moment that you feel that over a child or over a friend is just how God feels about you, but like times by a billion. Because that's how he feels towards us as he watches us explore our gifts. Because he knows that sometimes we're going to get it wrong and we're going to yell at him from the back seat of a car. But the moment that he sees us growing up and sees us start to flourish in them and use them well and use them with the foundation of love that he has given, he is beams with pride over us. He sees how we struggle to put others first. He sees how we struggle in comparing ourselves to others. But he loves that we are trying to do things differently. And this is all that Paul is reminding us at the end here. Because one day we will see Jesus face to face. And it's in that moment, in that crescendo of life for us, that we will be like him, because we will see him as he is. And you know what? It's in that moment that none of the rest of it will matter. Because we are face to face with Jesus. Just imagine that for a second. We are face to face with Jesus. So by grace, we have each been bestowed gifts on us. And they're important for us to use because they're important for us to see more of God, to see more of God's will and his glory in our community here. But we must know that when we are using those gifts, we are traveling along a path. We're walking that journey of life with God, journey of love with God. But that the heartbeat of our relationship with us is that God fully knows each one of us. And the hope and promise is that one day we will fully know him too. And that is how this passage ends. that above all gifts that we are given, we are people who hang on to faith, hope, and love as revealed in the person of Jesus Christ. Amen.